Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price, exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined by Colin Drew and Andrew Barron. Probably one of the last times Colin and I are going to be doing a show together. He's leaving for greener pastures, and he really is not trying to spend his entire life arguing with me about Mecole Hardman versus Byron Pringle's projection, which I think is understandable.
The projections are customizable, as we always say. So I'll still be auditing your projections. I'll just be doing it on my own time. And obviously, it's been a great few years working with you guys. So bittersweet for sure.
Yeah, and you know what better way than to look at a 3-game slate with Andy Dalton and Trevor Siemian and Tony Jones Jr. Prominently involved. I mean, Andrew, it is setting up as a great game theory bro slate, because it seems as if the Dallas Cowboys and the Buffalo Bills are just going to be like beyond owned.
Yeah, it seems that way. It's pretty obvious. I think there's some pretty clear chalk. The Bills, I actually am finding to be somewhat positive leverage, just because they're so much better of a play in a lot of ways. And it's essentially a pick 'em slate when it comes to probabilities, which I think is an interesting macro thing to bring up overall. When I sim the slates in general, usually there's a component of like, hey, what's the probability this guy is one of the top, you know, five skill position players, the top tight end, the top QB, et cetera. And it builds the perfect lineup out of a bit of that and some of their value. In this one, you can just turn it straight up raw projection, and like, it still only comes to a cap that's about 2,000 short. So you, from a simulation perspective, this is really a pick 'em. It doesn't mean you can just play the most expensive player at every position, but like, you can get the highest possible expected value lineup for less than $50,000 or $60,000, really, like a lineup that is well within the possible range of outcome. Like, the confidence interval on what the projection will be for each person is variable enough that we can kind of do whatever we want. So, you know, that's your kind of slate too, bud. It's got something for everybody.
It's got something for everyone. We got lots of crappy Dallas wide receivers to choose from. We're going to be trying to figure out the Buffalo backfield lottery. I think that can, you know, come into play. So injuries that we are monitoring for this slate, maybe there is like some chance that CeeDee Lamb is able to play. I think it's like very, very thin. I don't think he's been officially ruled out at this point. But then the big ones are Alvin Kamara is questionable and Mark Ingram is also questionable, which basically throws the entire state into flux. You know, if you thought there was any chance of a relaxing evening with your family, that's not happening.
Yeah, and it's always tough. We'll get some more practice info. We're doing this Wednesday morning. We'll get some more info from the Saints as far as whether Ingram's able to practice at all today. And that, I think, Kamara, they've been ruling out pretty early, and he hasn't practiced yet this week, wasn't at the walkthrough, didn't practice yesterday. So my guess is like Kamara, even though his list is questionable, is extremely doubtful. Ingram, I think we'll know tonight whether or not he is, you know, a true questionable or whether or not he's pretty doubtful too. But if you got to build with Ingram, that is for sure a big one. And then I guess for the showdown grinders, Daniel Carlson, questionable for the Raiders. Justin Fields, Allen Robinson.
Not a kicker.
Both probably out for the Bears.
Yeah.
And I think those are the main ones.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to do game by game for these three Thanksgiving games. We have the first game, the Chicago Bears at the Detroit Lions. And, you know, I guess I wish that I felt good at all about, you know, touting Jared Goff and that Goff is fully healthy for this game, because it does look like he's going to be back, because you could see Goff being, because the Bears defense has just been so poor. I mean, you know, they just lost a home game to Tyler Huntley, who actually played a little bit better as a passer than I anticipated. Like I could see Goff and, you know, the fact that there are, you know, he's got a bunch of cheap wide receivers, right? Hawkinson is cheap, relatively. Josh Reynolds is minimum salary. Amon-Ra St. Brown is 4,200. Khalif Raymond is 4,600. Like there are guys you could play with him, and he is going to be the lowest owned quarterback of the six available, but I have no faith there.
Yeah. Hilarious leverage spot here where it's like, technically, the second highest leverage score on this slate is the Detroit game, because they are, you know, like a Goff, Hawkinson, Josh Reynolds stack is something like 9-10% to be optimal and is going to be 4-5% owned. So, I mean, make of that what you will. Like a 9-10% optimal on a main slate is monstrous. You know, like that's nearly Chiefs territory. So I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's pretty positive, but like, I don't want a ton. I don't know. Colin, we tend to think similarly. Are you willing to dive too deep into Detroit other than like your throwaway 10% just for the hell of it?
Yeah, not diving too deep into Detroit. Probably not diving too deep into Goff. I think I'm like, you know, because it is closer to a pick'em slate, it's like, what are the chances that Goff is going to be the highest raw scorer on the slate? And that just feels like extremely thin.
Yeah.
And
about,
I think,
5%.
Yeah, so probably not going to go there, but I do think that some of the individual wide receivers have, well, they're obviously, the probabilities are that they're a bit more likely to get there. So I think all of them are positive leverage. Josh Reynolds, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Khalif Raymond, like the salary, even though Raymond is a little quote unquote overpriced, the salary doesn't matter quite as much in the slate. And so, yeah, if these guys are going to be 5% owned, like I'd probably want each of them in like 10% of lineups, and you know, I'd probably just one of them, probably not multiples. But I think if one of them gets there, then I think there's a reasonable chance that one of them has a good enough game to crack like a winning lineup.
I think the sharp way to attack this game leverage wise is actually because like we do have one very chalky piece, and that's going to be David Montgomery. So like the Bears passing stacks are going a little bit under-owned, and then DeAndre Swift is going a little bit under-owned. So I think if you're doing more in like your 20 max, you know, you can do three or four of those that have Swift and a Bears passing attack. That's like contrarian, but not insane, like playing a bunch of Jared Goff stacks.
Yeah. I mean, Josh Reynolds at 3,000 feels like he can get like 10 or 11 here and make optimals fairly easily.
I just don't think like 3,000 matters that much. So it's like,
right.
Yeah. Amon-Ra St. Brown can get 10 or 11 too. And so can Khalif Raymond. Like, so yeah, I guess he definitely can. He did play 95% of snaps his first game with them. Trinity Benson was out that game. So just keep an eye on inactives as he's active. Maybe they rotate stuff more, but it seems like it'll be Reynolds, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Khalif Raymond as the three wide receivers.
Well, how
are you?
How
are you
Darnell Mooney, though?
Do you like Reynolds best because of the shower narrative, or is this just you just like why Reynolds over St. Brown or Raymond?
Because I've always kind of thought Josh Reynolds is like a little decent. I this was like a big argument in like 2018. I think Woods and Kupp were like both, or maybe it was back when Cooks was on the team or something. And I just remember getting into arguments, but I think he's decent, and I also think coming in as
how
a free agent and. And I think he did okay.
He had some good games.
Yeah, I think he did all right.
Van Jefferson.
Yeah, I mean, and also, yeah, like I just think Reynolds is like a competent NFL wide receiver. He's played with Goff before. He came in off the street and immediately led them in snaps. So like, and maybe the 3,000 doesn't matter, but also maybe it could. You know, if it allows you to play Allen, Zeke, Diggs, and you know, DeAndre Swift or whatever, like allows you to jam in a bunch of the high price guys, and all the high price guys end up getting there or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about Detroit kind of enough. And like, you know, where I was leaning with this is that we should get into the Chicago passing attack a little bit because Andy Dalton is going to throw. Darnell Mooney and he had a great connection last week. We've got, you know, Darnell Mooney and Marquise Goodwin both played a ton of snaps last week and are both very, very fast. So like those are typical home run hitters. I'm intrigued there because they're not getting played and David Montgomery is going to be super, super popular. And Detroit's defense is really bad. So like, I don't know. I think it's worth getting pretty significantly over the field on Chicago stacks.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. So what I usually do, I look at like optimal percentage compared to the ownership projections. And if it's negative leverage, maybe I'll play a guy up to his optimal percent. If it's positive leverage, maybe I'll play him up to two times his optimal percent. So to me, that would definitely mean getting over the field on Goodwin, Mooney, Cole Kmet, could consider in up to 20% of lineups, and then under the field on David Montgomery. I am a little bit higher on him than our projections are. I think Andy Dalton will check it down more to David Montgomery than Fields did. And so like, I'd probably play him closer to like 15% market share of targets than I would eight, but still he's going to be massively popular on this slate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about the one thing I did notice was Jamal Williams is the running back minimum at 4,000. You know, not that he has like this amazing role or anything, but I mean, Jamal Williams has got to have like a decent probability of outscoring every Bills running back, all of which are going to garner some owner, you know, 8 to 12% on all of the Buffalo Bills running backs or something like that. And I mean, we have Jamal Williams as one of the better leverage plays at the running, you know, 3% owned, but about 9% to make the optimal roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's tough. Like his role, the first like 3 weeks of the season, like he was
so good,
like a light Swift. Like he was getting a lot of passing down reps. He was getting targets from Goff and, you know, those went away. He was injured for a period of time, did come back last week, was eased in a little bit more, but like Swift has just been so good that they're also trying to lean on him a bit more. So I think you're right. I wasn't going to be the one to bring up Jamal Williams, but somebody had to.
Yeah. I mean, I think he is a pretty, pretty legitimate play. I mean, so I guess my thought is David Montgomery, mega chalk seems bad. One, because you're locked in and it doesn't leave you the swapping stuff with the Saints. Two, you know, Josh Jacobs is going to be half as owned, a third as owned, and has a very similar range of outcomes. And then, you know, we have guys like Pollard and the Bills running backs. Like, I don't know. It just feels like a 70% owned David Montgomery. I mean, one, it can totally punish you and you have to spend the rest of your Thanksgiving looking at a bunch of dead lineups with no David Montgomery. But the converse is looking at the 8.4 points with the snowflake all of Thanksgiving also has the potential to make you pretty miserable.
Yeah, you get out of there. This is really easy for me, but I also like am very much I just make the decision and ride with it. Like I'm probably gonna play like 20% David Montgomery, and if it kills me and I'm done early, whatever. But I just think he's kind of a bad play for all of those contextual factors you said. He's probably going to be the highest known player on the slate, period. So I'm just coming in way under. Like, I mean, you've even got, you want to like a wacky play that isn't insane is Damir Bird at like less than 1% owned. He ran 25 routes last week to Goodwin's 29, and Goodwin is going to be 6-7% owned. I mean, it's a 3-game slate, so we are diving very deep, but like Damir Bird played most of the snaps last week and he was out there running routes, and Andy Dalton can throw. Like he's, I don't know. I just really find the Bears passing attack attractive, especially when you talk about the David Montgomery 80% owned thing. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I would just say like, if you believe he's going to get like up to 15% of targets, he's actually going to project ahead of Zeke. And so the optimal probability that we have there is going to be higher than that. It's going to be closer to 50%. So.
Oh, cool hedge.
It was just weird. He literally,
I think our projection is low on him. Like I think
he literally didn't get targeted last week though.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's neither here nor there. And it's weird to adjust from one quarterback to another, especially when their play styles are so different in the middle of a game. But also they've had, you know, 2 days to practice. And Matt Nagy's been, according to reports, he's been told he's going to get fired after this Thursday game. And then he said he wasn't. But I don't know. It's just kind of a mess. This is clearly the least attractive game for fantasy purposes. And people are kind of hesitant to use the early guys in their lineups anyways. So. That's really all I got is that this is the contrarian game.
Yeah, you can at least get $1 million screenshot if you full game stack this game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Darnell Mooney, 206 air yards, aka Sklansky yards last week. You know,
yeah, he got 15 targets. Like it just was like every play they were throwing to him, which was insane. So our next game, the Las Vegas Raiders playing at Dallas. This is the game where if you have like a soul read, is clearly the way to attack, because there's a bunch of stuff up in the air, right? Because we have the combination of Amari and CeeDee not playing. Blake Jarwin is on the IR. So they haven't used any of these guys, right? McKeon, Sprinkle, Noah Brown. They really have not used any of these guys. I mean, Simi Fehoko is going to be active for the first time since week three. My take is that this is going to be a Pollard game, and that Pollard is going to play some actual wide receiver here, and they're going to do more two running back stuff. So that's how I'm going to attack it. What are you thinking about this incoming Michael Gallup and Cedric Wilson shot, Colin?
I'm thinking I'm going to onslaught Dallas with all my DAC lineups to try to get a little differentiation without just like not playing Dallas, because they are in such a good spot and such a short slate. And so one of the things, like last year when I was studying the three game in the short slates, was that a lot of the field will stack these games, right? They'll stack with two Dallas players, but the percentage of the field that goes super deep into like four man stacks compared to the top 1% lineups has historically presented positive leverage. So I think those guys are right. They're good plays. They're good values on the slate. They're going to be good one-offs as part of Buffalo stacks. But I think by playing three of them, I think you do differentiate yourself, especially when you're mixing in lineups that have like Pollard and Cedric Wilson and Noah Brown and stuff like that. So I think there are ways to get unique even with Dallas builds.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on those Dallas builds, Andrew?
I like that. I hadn't really considered that, but I think that's a very astute point. It's like it's funny because Thanksgiving is traditionally the first super short slate of the year. And then we start to get a bunch of them. So we get into this thinking each year. And this is the one where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm kind of rusty, but he's right. That's a great way to think about it, where you can just play these massive onslaughts where four or five people on the same team is not going to work really on an 11 game slate. It's kind of drawing dead, but on a three game slate, yeah, if only one team scores over 30, like it's probable that four of those guys are going to be optimal. You can even rack the defense with it. From a broader standpoint, like Dallas and Las Vegas passing is going to be the other like big time chalk. So like there's going to be a lot of David Montgomery in the first game and then a passing attack stack one way or the other on this game. So just worth noting that that's the most popular thing. And obviously it's more popular than it is to be optimal. So doing something weird, like Colin is suggesting, is
pretty- The single entry guys, like Davis, you've been playing more single entry. I mean, I think it's pretty easy to play Josh Jacobs and Darnell Mooney instead of David Montgomery and Hunter Renfro. Like that's just an easy 2v2 swap that changes your projections maybe down a point or two, but provides massive reduced ownership. So that's like a pretty easy single entry decision for me.
Yeah. You know, I think a couple of the single entry angles that are pretty interesting. I mean, the one that really leaps out to me is playing Schultz and Waller together in this game, you know, because people are going to there's three games. Oh, I got to leave my flex open for the late game for, you know, all of the swap potential. And I actually think Schultz is probably just going to get his ass targeted off in this game. I think Dalton Schultz might play every snap on offense for Dallas and might even lead them in targets because he plays, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage. He plays in the slot, and Gallup is just a pure outside wide receiver. And, you know, Noah Brown and Malik Turner and Simi Fehoko, these guys are just not any good. You know, like how many times have I had to see Noah Brown drop a pass? Like the Cowboys offense looks terrible without Amari and CeeDee. And if you really want to be a hardo, you know, that systemic risk of them looking really bad without those guys is very real. Like I could see this being a super disappointing spot for them.
Yeah. Look what happened last week. You know?
Yeah. They looked all, I mean, they looked so bad. Like it was not good.
And that's two of the last three, right? They were really bad 3 weeks ago, like in Dak's first game back. So, I mean, it's a high powered offense, but like they can lay an egg, and on a three game slate where they are going to be the overwhelming chalk, it's pretty, you know, especially like a kind of gimmicky outside receiver like Gallup, who is going to need to convert a 40-yard target to like to be optimal, I think.
Yeah, and you
Gallup is not gimmicky. Gallup will see.
Gallup's good. Cedric Wilson's pretty solid too.
Sure, I like Wilson better than I like Gallup, to be honest.
Well, Wilson is going to get to play the slot snaps here. Yeah, I mean Wilson is one of the better value plays we've ever seen on a Thanksgiving slate. I think that Schultz is also really I think he's about that good as well.
Yeah, and you glossed over it like a tiny bit. You did address it though, and two tight ends on the slate is definitely viable. We actually have like really strong tight ends on the slate relative to how dust the tight end position generally is. And between Waller, Schultz, Dawson Knox has been heavily targeted by Josh Allen over the last 4 weeks as well when he's been active. So, and then Hockenson, Cole Kmet, like these are all guys that are second options in some cases on their teams. So for right. sure, tight end and flex, like if you run your optimizer without that normally, like check it back in.
Yeah, when Michael Gallup and Hunter Renfrow are the top two receivers on the slate, like tight end, double tight ends is pretty viable. Obviously, no disrespect to Steph Diggs, who we will talk about shortly. But
yeah, so on the Raiders side, you know that like one, you know Renfrow and Waller are going to project the strongest. We have Bryan Edwards, who is just an all-time win sprinter at this point. I mean, just what a win sprinter! 83% snap share. Last week against Cincinnati, they're trailing the entire time. He doesn't even generate a target. And then we have another famous wind sprinter in Zay Jones getting about 75% of the snaps. And then DeSean Jackson is the opposite of a wind sprinter. He barely plays, but when he's out there, he gets targeted. And you want to talk about a guy who could potentially break the Thanksgiving slate if you don't have him. DeSean Jackson, two targets, 112 yards, and a touchdown is, I don't know, that's like 1% probability of happening or something. But I could very easily see him being the guy you need for the Thanksgiving $1 million.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely conceivable. And I think that's the kind of stuff I want to do if I'm going to be playing 30% plus owned Derek Carr. Is getting a little wacky like that, playing some weird pieces with him. The idea of, you know, onslaughting them with Josh Jacobs and being like, okay, this is the Raiders just put up 30 and no one else does, because, you know, the Bills best offense here, but they have a really tough matchup against the Saints and they have not looked good either lately. So Dallas, like clear, right? We have these big totals, but there's more variability in this slate than you'd think. Like there's a few bad teams that people are going to want to avoid, but Dallas and Buffalo, despite being sort of reputationally two of the top couple offenses in the NFL, there's holes there.
Secret is just that every team is bad in the NFL now. Every team is bad and can get shut out or can score like three points.
Yeah, like the Dallas all line like under 20.5 or something. You're like, that could actually happen.
Yeah, that's very
Jackson
real.
Did play 30% of snaps last week. So it was the second week with the team. He played 15% first week, only had one target. He played 30% last week, no targets, but like he'll probably get two deep shots and maybe he can go for 60 and a touchdown, but that's probably good enough on the slate.
Yeah. I mean, it probably is. And then, I mean, so we have this Waller ownership projection looks a little insane to me, Andrew, but we have him as you know, clearly the most owned tight end of the slate. If he approaches this greater than 50% ownership, I don't know. I mean, I just think I'll just play Schultz and Knox and not touch Waller at that percentage.
Yeah, it's funny. So like this is actually accounting for, it's only got like one, I want to say it totals to like 1.11 tight ends per lineup on DraftKings, and he is projecting for close to 70% owned. He's just so much stronger of a play. Like, I mean, I get why it's going to happen, but I'm with you. Like he's not worth being owned that much, but he's definitely the one alpha tight end and you can afford him. So he's going to get played a lot. The other thing worth mentioning is that on the shorter the slate, the more prone to outliers getting like real wacky the algo is. Usually it will have like one, or it can miss on the ends of the spectrum. Like the highest projected owned guys are generally where it's going to miss if it's going to. And so the shorter the slate, the more likely that is to happen. So probably one or two of these 70% owned guys is only 45% owned, but not exactly sure what that is yet.
Yeah. And then, I mean, Renfro as a bring back. I mean, I think I would just rather at these percentages just do no bring backs with the Raiders. Cause I, you know, actually, funnily enough, if you remember the Cowboys last year, very similar spot against against a bad team. They just get absolutely ran at home last year versus the Washington football team. They score 16 points on offense. Andy Dalton has one passing touchdown, and so Amari ended up being the bring back in that game. But I don't know, like Renfro at 50-ish percent ownership or whatever. I would rather play anyone in that price range from New Orleans, Buffalo, just for the swaptions too, I think.
Buffalo just don't have any rules. All of your normal rules that you set up for a main slate, throw them. Don't, like, you know, you're going to want to point yourself in a certain direction, but anything you force, like, you should absolutely allow offensive players against your defense. You absolutely should not force a bring back. You absolutely should not say, don't play, you know, running back with a high market share of carry with the top receiver on his team. Like, all of that stuff that I normally do not allow on a main slate, like, I'm absolutely allowing it because you have to. It's like, it's just wait, with only three games, some team scoring 35 is basically makes all bets off.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree. Like, no rules. Like, the rules I'm using are to try to generate leverage rather than to try to, like, improve the correlation. So, like, the four-man onslaught idea with Dak and with Josh Allen is to try to generate leverage rather than to, like, improve the correlation of the lineups. And I do think that's how you should be thinking about this slate with rules, is like, you could consider just playing one of Renfro or Waller because they're both gonna be massively popular. And that would be a decision you make because of leverage rather than correlation. So that's how I'm thinking about optimizers this week.
Yeah.
Don't allow David Montgomery with Dak Prescott or something. Like, I'm not going to do that, but that's the kind of stuff you want to start talking about. And
you can cap your P-own too. Like, that's
yeah. I've got some stuff in the article that we'll post on the website, has some other ideas for deduping if you want to, like, build a little template.
Yeah. See, I guess also the guy here again, who, if you're talking about really low percentage outcomes, Kenyon Drake has been not getting used at all, but he had a run from week 6 to week 9 where he was getting the ball a ton. They were using him way more on passing downs, and they've gone reverse. Josh Jacobs has had 5 receptions in back-to-back games for the first time in his career, but we're talking about a 4% owned guy who is, a reasonable chance at catching 4 passes and scoring a touchdown. He also, Kenyon Drake also does kick returns. So if you want to add 0.001 equity for him there for the kick return touchdown, you can do that. Sure. Weird that Kenyon Drake would be a kick return. I guess he did it when he was at Alabama, but it's so funny. Like, I remember when Kenyon Drake was the young, exciting guy, and now he's the dusty old vet.
Probably like somebody back there who can catch the ball, I guess.
Yeah, he's probably like 26 years old.
Zay Jones can't catch it.
Not even, yeah. Right? Was like 18 months ago, he was the young, like, fun guy. That's how poor running backs, like, they just start in and out so fast. What a brutal job.
Yeah. All right. Buffalo at New Orleans. So Vegas actually has a higher team total than New Orleans, but I think due to the function of the slate, New Orleans players are going to generate more ownership, you know, one, because whoever starts at, you don't think so?
Yeah. Hard to disagree.
I mean, maybe the running back position, if there's clear news that comes out, but nobody that's a pass catcher is going to be popular for the Saints, and
for good reason.
You don't need the salary savings at tight ends. So, like, Juwan Johnson, who's going to start in place of Trotman, or at least get the pass catching responsibilities. Like, nobody's going to play these guys. So if there's clear news on Ingram versus Tony Jones, which, let's just go into, like, what that might look like, then people might play those guys. But I think that's it. Just the Saints running backs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe this is just colored by my own thinking then, but I want to have exposure to Traquan and Deontay and Callaway for the swaps. Like, I want to have lots of room to be swapping, given what may or may not happen with Ingram and Tony Jones. But again, that could, we could know Thursday morning that Ingram's not going to play, and then I would be off of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, I think basically what would happen if Ingram was out is that Tony Jones would take over the majority of his carries, like maybe half of his targets. And then Ty Montgomery is also expected to be
showdown hero, Ty Montgomery.
So like he was starting to play some of the passing reps before he got hurt when Ingram was starting that first week. So I think Montgomery would take over some of the passing work. And then Dwayne Washington, I guess, would get like the 15% of carries or whatnot. So I think that's what things look like. It's just hard because if you don't have the clear news, and hopefully we'll learn something today, it's just hard to build with Ingram because like the swap options are pretty gross too. Well,
the swap options on the Saints are not great.
Speaking of Saints running backs, anyone want to get really weird and cape up for playing less than 1% owned Taysom Hill at QB?
Well, I mean, wouldn't it be the most Sean Payton thing ever be keep it a secret until you know the game starts that Taysom's actually playing quarterback?
It sure would
be hilarious.
I mean, that's I forget the name of the reporter, but one of the Saints reporters basically said Simeon's been so dog shit that it's time for Payton to start thinking about it. And I haven't understood this whole time why he hasn't been playing quarterback. Apparently he couldn't practice at all when he got the concussion. And then apparently he had a foot injury too, which is why
the COVID didn't... toe.
he's got COVID toe, I guess. I don't know. But apparently last week, as far as I can tell, was the first time in like 3 years that he didn't get an offensive touch at all. He was healthy and playing, but did not get an offensive snap in week 11 for the Saints, which I, as far as I can tell, is like, that's never happened. So either you would think that would mean that Sean Payton is over Taysom Hill, and then they just gave him like $40 million this week. So I don't know. Who knows?
Definitely a very weird situation.
Andrew, I actually love this angle. What a Thanksgiving slate that would be for Taysom to show up and be the quarterback at 4,800.
They needed to make him like flex eligible so you could like swap Mark Ingram out to Taysom Hill.
Yeah, that would be cool. It's just, you know, it's Thanksgiving, no bad plays basically. But I mean, I think the Bills are going a little under rostered. They're gonna get ownership because like they are good plays, but Josh Allen and Steph Diggs are in that 40% optimal probability, which is right there with like Dak and Gallup. And they're getting played at like about half the rate. So I think it's a pretty strong, I think it's a very strong stack. Obviously Buffalo has been disappointing. I wonder how much if like, because of all the potential news coming that those ownerships could go up just because people
Diggs,
are going to try to stay for say for
Diggs
it.
Will go up because like I just looked, you know, through the last couple of years of Thanksgiving slates, and you know these top end guys who are the highest in every projection system just usually get ownership, and mm-hmm. I think it's pretty consensus that Diggs is the easy wide receiver one on this slate. So
it's gonna be like when Michael Thomas used to be good on Thanksgiving.
Now I don't think like Beasley and Sanders, like they, you know, they've been so average for the past few weeks, and like I think those guys will probably be overlooked, but probably not Diggs.
All right, we gotta talk about the elephant in the room, which is Zach Moss being a healthy scratch in this game and Matt Breida being the running back play that you need. I'm gonna be the only one brave enough to bring up this possibility.
Also, luckily Andrew and I play like 300 lineups so
in the last 2 weeks.
So the reason why I say that is I follow a couple Bills fans, and they have been a couple of them that I follow have been saying like this is going to be a thing, like Moss is going to be Moss is either going to be clearly the third running back or a potential healthy scratch, and
that's
and
pretty funny.
Give Breida more.
I've got one really good friend from home who's a huge Bills fan. He texted me this morning, Matt Breida Thanksgiving.
yeah, like I which I think is like when you root for a team and a guy comes out of nowhere and just looks so explosive relative to the other players. It's like, it's the Pollard thing, right? Like, it's not that Zeke is bad. It's just that every time Pollard gets the ball, he looks so much better than Zeke. And I think the same thing is true.
Pete Overzet tweet was amazing.
It really was. Yeah, it was so good. But I mean, I think Breida is a very similar thing where he just is so much more explosive than Moss and Singletary. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like I will probably click the button on $4,800 Matt Breida at 2% ownership a little bit.
In single entry?
I might, yeah. Whoa. Especially because especially because I can get bailed out if the lineup is good and just play Tony Jones or Ingram. And
I can get bailed out by playing 300 lineups and saying that these guys are 2% owned, like Moss, Singletary, Breida, like anywhere from 1 or 0 to 2% owned on each of these guys. And it's very possible Breida takes over the role that Zach Moss had. It's also possible that Moss was going through something that wasn't reported and, you know, ends up back in the role he had for 8 weeks or whatever. And so 2% owned guys on a 3-game slate, like that's gold. So especially on teams, stacks, like, yeah, for sure. Bills running back.
Moss has been banged up off and on a couple times this year. He's been out a couple times with injuries. So I think that, I mean, that does seem to be like a real thing. And I mean, look, Breida had 6 touches for 60 yards last week, and he scored the 2 touchdowns the week before on 8 snaps. So, and Breida has always been this guy for Breida's entire career. He has always been a guy who has scored touchdowns on, limited numbers of touches. I mean, he has multiple 2-touchdown games in his career with under 10 touches.
He's wide receiver fast, I think, right? Isn't that the thing?
He was a track guy. He was a track guy in college.
Like, he ran a sub 4.4, which, like, running backs are not as fast as wide receivers in general. And he is, I believe, wide receiver fast, rather. I think the two big points here are, like, A, we have NFI, which of these guys is going to do it, really? In the last 2 weeks, they each have 2 red zone rushing attempts. So I don't know. But like what Colin was saying, especially, you know, if you're an MME bro, like, you know, like I am, 2% on each of them, like, it's just, you got to play 10% each. Like, who cares? There's no bad plays. One of them's probably going to pull, but there's a very strong chance, you know, a greater than 2% each, that one of them ends up scoring a touch. You know, even 1 touchdown is in the conversation. And if one of them scores 2, they're definitely optimal. And so at 2%,
you MME bros doing with defense?
Who just truly roulette spinning?
The one rule
I will make is I will not run a quarterback stack into the
with defense. His defense.
With the no, with I'm fine with his defense. With the opposing, I won't like. I won't.
No, play. I think the opposing defense is good, because if Josh Allen throws a pick 6, that locks him into 40 passing attempts. You know what I mean?
I somewhat agree. I'm saying a full on quarterback. Like, I won't do a quarterback double stack into the opposing defense, because that I think is a little too rich. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Yeah. If a guy throws 2 pick 6s in the first quarter and a half, then hey, great game script the rest of the time. But
I wonder if
I'm stopping is a full quarterback sack into the opposing defense. Other than that, I don't care.
I wonder if the Raiders defense is Raiders defense with the Cowboys double stack actually correlates. Cause the Cowboys, I guarantee it. I know from my heart of hearts, what they want to do in this game is they want to run 40 times. And if they get up, they are going to run the air out of the ball. But if they're down, they've been one of the most game script sensitive teams in terms of pass rate all year.
It does not correlate at all. But if you're trying to get leverage,
yeah, but in my mind, it does. That's all that matters.
Like, it doesn't correlate at all. It's a huge negative correlation that banks on one thing happening, which is a defensive special teams touchdown, which rarely happens. So it's like big negative correlation, but the field's not going to do that. Like, that's why I think Andrew's willing to let it happen.
You're forgetting that this is a showdown slate. So when
that's why 2 tight ends and flex.
Yeah. Well, showdowns, tight ends, fullbacks, this is showdown slates are when we get the weirdest, most random outcomes.
Sean Payton in primetime on a holiday slate definitely screams fuckery is coming.
Yeah. I want to go look back at some of the guys who have scored touchdowns for the Saints on Thanksgiving. Like, I remember maybe 2018, like Dan Arnold was prominently involved. You know, we've had Josh Hill slates. Like, he loves Alex Arma, who I don't even think is on the team anymore, but he loves to do this crap.
Correlation is a weird thing too, overall, because like, yeah, obviously a quarterback and the opposing defense is going to correlate strongly negatively, because when that quarterback puts touchdowns on the board, it actively takes points away from the opposing defense. So yeah, but what Davis is kind of hinting at is like, at the extremes, like, we're talking about wacky shit happening. Like, at the extremes, that correlation can be different. So like, I don't think the ceilings are necessarily as negatively correlated as, like, yeah, obviously the median. But like, when we look at correlation overall, you know, like running back and wide running back one and wide receiver one are positively correlated. How often do you guys play this on a main slate, play the same team running back one and wide receiver one? I basically never do that, even though they are positive.
Only if there's major price and quirks, like if like the AJ Dillon, Devonta Adams last week was an example where I did, but yeah, I typically don't. I think the point is though, like on the showdown stuff, especially like it, the reason it's okay to do that is because the field is grouping that out pretty hard. And if the field's grouping it out hard on this slate too, then it's okay to do that. If the field wasn't taking that into account, you would rather just play the correlation. But I think that's what, you know, that's probably the takeaway here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that seems about right. I mean, I probably the best DST play is the Bills, right? I mean, just that they are the best raw play, but they are the
Bears are pretty good too.
Yeah, but the Bears defense stinks. Like I care that they stink and that they don't generate a ton of pressure. I think that
that's a better argument.
So I think that I would rather, because yeah, I mean, we have the Bears pretty significantly more owned than the Bills defense, which I find like I would much rather play the Bills, I think.
So I think part of that is also we have the Saints projected really run heavy. So
really run heavy.
If you're really run heavy, you're not producing opportunities to sack or have turnovers. And so
which is a weird thing, like we're talking about with the correlation. The teams that pass more are more dangerous to the opposing defense, but they also offer more opportunity for the opposing defense. So even though negative correlation, like they can still, you know, the thing that is good for the offense is also good for the defense, the opposing defense, as far as DFS goes, which is counterintuitive.
Yeah. So like Saints D versus Josh Allen, I think I'd be fine letting happen. Same thing with Vegas versus Dak. Like I'm probably like, if you're playing Goff teams, like, are you really also going to play the Bears D?
Probably not.
Jared Goff, 310 passing yards, 2 passing touchdowns.
Still not good enough to be
four sacks, three picks. Yeah. Because, I mean, what the Lions have done, the fourth quarter blitz twice with Goff, where they just went nuts in the fourth quarter throwing passes. Yeah. I don't know. All right. What is, Andrew, what is your favorite double stack on the slate?
Josh Allen with Emmanuel Sanders, and then who cares? Like, we're getting Manny Sanders sub 10% again. I know I've been chasing it forever. I write about it in The Sims all the time. He's like been my basically favorite play of the season, and it's been ugly oftentimes, but huge range of outcomes on him. He gets very high value, very deep targets. He's got to come down with a couple, and like, you know, if he does here, he's still less than 10% on a freaking 3-game slate. Love him.
Colin?
Love that stack. I think similar thesis for me, I would say Dak Prescott with Cedric Wilson and Dalton Schultz.
That's because mine.
I think basically taking these like elite quarterbacks with huge team totals that are mobile, can rush for touchdowns, and leaving off the alpha wide receiver, if you want to call Michael Gallup an alpha, but leaving off the most popular wide receiver, you're getting great plays, positive leverage, access to high team totals. Those are like single entry approaches for me.
I mean, Michael Gallup is an alpha. Michael Gallup is underrated. And he is obviously going to be extreme chalk, but if he settles in at closer to like 50% than 70%, I think that is a little bit of a mistake. Cause I think he's got a huge ceiling here.
You only asked for my double stack though, cause we all know I'm trying to triple stack these.
No, guys. I'm totally with you on Cedric and Schultz. Schultz is my favorite, in a vacuum play of the slate, considering what I expect his role to be and what I expect his ownership to be. And also, you know, it just gets you into some good combinations. So, that'll do it. You know, we will have the alerts for inactives for all these games on Thanksgiving. The projections will be updated, the main slate stuff will be coming as well. So everyone enjoy your Thanksgiving, and we'll be back soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.